Herzlich willkommen zu Mein Element, dem Podcast vom Lützeburger Journal und zusammen erbe ich beim FNR, dem Luxembourg National Research Fund.
I feel that we spend a waste years of our life just filling paperwork. Most of the time completely useless. Question whether it was a serious comment or a sarcastic one, right? Because, you know, as a scientist, you are supposed to be the serious guy, not the funny guy, right? Especially as a, I wouldn't say maybe as a scientist, but as a computer scientist. We have a, you know, as typically seen as the geeks of the team, right? Be honest, curing cancer is not your real goal.
KI Katalonien an Cabo. So kann ich die Episode von heute nennen. Herzlich willkommen zu Mein Element. Mein Name ist Max. Und ihr lauscht im Podcast an zusammen erbischt mit dem Lützeburger Journal an dem FNR, dem Luxembourg National Research Fund. Und dann wird ihr von dieser her, da das den Jordi Cabot. Und ihn erklärt Milo, wie ihn dann sein Beruf einem 12-jährigen Kontgänger erklären.
So I'm automating the creation of the software applications that she sees and uses every day on her mobile phone.
Okay. And how would you describe it to me?
Oh, it's not that different, right? So in the sense that we, in the team, we try to speed up the development process of software applications and improve the quality of these software applications. So there are less crashes when you use them, right? And that involves really mixing a lot of techniques from what we call modeling, where basically instead of actually writing the code, you first draw the designs of this application. And then, of course, we mix a little bit of the AI magic to speed up even more the process.
KI, das ist für viele Leute eine Mischung aus Daten und Zauberei. Aber wenn ich mit KI von heute so gucke, dann denke ich mir immer, krass, dass du da lohnen noch kann. Wobei, die ganz große Quantensprung man nicht mit Menge KI aufruhen, eigentlich nicht. Sind du viel mehr pragmatisch in der WW. Was kann ich halt kacheln? Oder schreib mal das E-Mail. Mir lohnt mal ein Getan auf das Herz. Du siehst dir doch auch so, oder? Dass er schon bald peinlich froh und ein KI stellt und hofft, dass nimmer kein Dat jemals rausfindet. Mir wirst du das nicht beim Jordi, denn er ist ja KI-Expert. War das denn nicht peinlich für ihn, da bis ein KI gefroht hat?
Well, I'm a really bad programmer. Amazingly, given that I lead a team of software engineers and software researchers, but I'm really bad at programming. I would say that I know the concept of programming, but I'm getting lost in the syntax of programming, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, you know the concept of the language, but then you, when you have to write them down, every programming language has a different syntax, a different function, different libraries to use. I'm really bad at that. And to me, AI is really the solution to that problem. So I tell to AI what I need, AI does it for me. Then, of course, you get fooled by AI. And this has also happened to me, that I wasted 2 hours of my time trying to understand why the code that AI had produced was not working in my case, until I realized that, in fact, the AI had invented some of the functions of that code, and they were not working because they were not even existing. And I didn't realize this at first until I looked for them in Google. There were zero results, so I had to reach the conclusion that, in fact, those functions were basically an invention of the AI system itself.
And would you say that AI is the future, or is there something even more evolving than AI is around the corner that nobody sees yet? Like, for example, we thought the internet is the big thing, then AI came and everybody said, what? Is it possible? Is there something already around the corner where you say this will be the thing that we have to look out for?
Well, first, AI is the present. Mm-hmm. I would not even say it's the future. It's already a present. I think that most of the people are already using AI for some, maybe for some for just writing emails, others more for software development, but everybody is using AI. Then the discussion is whether the current architecture of AI systems is the future, or we are still, you know, waiting for a next revolution that will actually propel even more what AI can do. And here the experts say that we are waiting for this thing to happen. And basically this next thing is where the AI systems will be able to understand and have already kind of a certain knowledge of the world, instead of having to learn everything from scratch. Because right now AI, every time you train a new one of these copilots, GPTs, LLMs, basically, you train from scratch. They know nothing, and they learn everything from the data. Mm-hmm. which is not very efficient, right? Because they have to reinvent or relearn things like the gravity and the laws of physics. Mm-hmm. If you could somehow start, say, the AI learning with already this kind of basic knowledge of how the world works, that would speed a lot the capabilities of AI, because then they could just focus on more innovative things and not focus so much on reinventing what a baby learned before it's 5 years old, right?
And what is the difference between, let's say, a normal algorithm and artificial intelligence? Or is it basically the same thing?
No, in fact, it's not at all the same thing. In an algorithm, you, so the human designing the algorithm, explains the steps that you need to follow to reach the solution. Mm-hmm. In the AI, basically, you just tell the AI what is the solution that you expect, and it's the AI system who figures out how to arrive to that solution, often in a way that you had never thought about. Mm-hmm. Right?
Where do you, besides programming, use AI in your daily life?
When writing French. So when I need to write an email in French, that's a clear use where I always go through AI. Before, I was already using translation systems, but with AI, you can have an iteration. You can have even a dialogue, right? So you can say, okay, translate this to French. And then you say, yeah, but you know, I would like to use this particular verb because it sounds to me that it looks better with this verb. And then, you know, have an next iteration with the same text where the AI is now using your verb. So to me, this kind of a possibility of refining the result is really useful with AI.
Yeah, I use it for the same thing.
For French?
For French, always for French.
Really? Okay.
It's I usually type everything in German and say, please translate and make me sound smart, and then it works.
And then I also use it to create the image, the feature image for my blog post. Mm-hmm. So before I had to go to one of these sites with free images and, you know, use keywords and try to find one that was more or less similar to what I wanted to express in the blog post. Now I just use one of these text-to-image generators, explain what I want. And again, it's the quality is good enough. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think that it's important that we keep in mind that the quality of the result of the AI system is, you know, it's good enough, not perfect. So if you are looking for perfection because you are a graphic designer, probably you are still not there and you need to modify. But again, for things where you don't need a professional and you just need an average result, that saves a lot of work.
Aber wenn wir da schon beim Blogpost sind, denn Jordi hat den Mega-Output. Also nicht nur singen wissenschaftliche Publikationen, neben noch Sachen, die hier so nie lernen möchte. Zum Beispiel Bücher schreiben. Oder direkt 2 Instagram-Kanäle haben. Oder, wie ihn selber schon gespart hat, Blogposts schreiben. Und die sind ganz speziell, weil auf seiner Website hat hier sogar eine extra Kategorie mit dem Namen Research Rants. Also quasi ein Platz, wo man sich kann über die Recherche abregen. Mit Jordi, für was riechst du dich denn immer so ab? Und was war dein Lieblingsrant?
There's a controversial one, if you want. Which is one of the first ones that I wrote. It has a title something like, Be honest, curing cancer is not your real goal. Mm-hmm. And this came from when I was in Toronto. Many of my friends were on the chemistry or biochemistry fields, and they were working in hospitals. And many of those, they were saying that they were, investigating a cure for cancer or other big diseases. But that's not really true, in the sense that they were all they were all working to get a permanent position in a university or in a research lab, and that's why they were very careful not to publish the negative results, right? A negative result is basically when you try to find a solution to your problem, whatever protein that you need to test, to whether it works against this specific type of cancer cell, doesn't work. If you publish this negative result, it means that if there are other labs that were trying to consider the same type of solution, they will know, we don't need to waste our time on that, we can do another thing. But if they don't waste their time on that, maybe they will look for something that is actually the right solution and they will go faster than you. Mm-hmm. So in science, we mix two things: the willingness of advancing knowledge and, you know, solving curing of diseases, with the reality that people want to eat and they want to have a kind of a stability, right? So I think we should be more honest and accept that either we put in place a different types of incentives, or we are basically wasting thousands or tens of thousands of hours of researchers repeating experiments that there's another team of researchers already know that mm-hmm. that's really a dead end.
So do you publish your negative results?
Sometimes in the blog, yes. And we even organized once a special issue where people were only supposed to send negative results. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think if you could get credit for the negative results, meaning that you could publish the negative result and you would at least get recognition in terms of number of articles and citations for that, there would be more motivation to publish those.
So in fact, the system doesn't allow making mistakes.
Well, the system allows, but doesn't really reward you for making the mistakes, and mm-hmm. even less for openly talking about these mistakes so that others can go faster, right? We have seen this very recently in the AI domain. We have DeepSeek, this wonderful, popular LLM from China. And we have seen that OpenAI just did some comments saying that, oh yes, these DeepSeek guys rediscover some of the secrets that we had discovered before and we had put in this ChatGPT. But to me, again, this is saying, okay, even in a field as crucial for us as a society as AI, you have this game between companies that basically are slowing the process, because DeepSeek now is open source, so you can learn from what they did. But if OpenAI had released their trade secret before, we would have already moved faster and passed that result, right? So again, there's a capitalism in place, so I understand that there's other factors, but to me, the fact that even in science, we need to compete against each other, and this is slowing the overall pace of advancement, it's sad.
What is your rant that is non-scientific? What is one thing where you could rant for hours about something where you say, why is this like this?
Bureaucracy. Bureaucracy. I feel that we spend or waste years of our lives just filling paperwork. Most of the time completely useless, right? I mean, or where, and that's part of the motivation as well, of the things we do, or where there would be a digital solution that could re-automate the full pipeline and just get it done, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, now even in Luxembourg, this is being fixed, so I'm happy for that. But when I arrive, you know, you go to the doctor and then you have to send by postal mail the invoice of the doctor to get reimbursed. I mean, come on, 21st century, do I actually need to do that? So I'm happy that this is being fixed, but it's one of the many examples where it makes no sense that with the technology that we have, the processes, the bureaucratic processes are so behind that we waste our life. I mean, this morning alone, I had to go to Esperange to get this parental permission so mm-hmm. that my daughter can leave the county with the school. Sure, I wasted 1 hour. What's the point of that? I mean, in Luxembourg, you can do it digitally. In Luxembourg city, you can do it digitally. In Esperanto, you have to go in person. So this to me, I mean, this digital transformation is really the hope I have that at some point the bureaucracy will at least be much simpler.
Iwer 10 Millionen Euro hat Jordi schon in Grants so gesucht kriegt. Und das ohne Picobello, ohne Glecksrad und ohne Hülle der Löwe. Dadurch nicht nur für ihr Jamisch viel Geld, sondern auch in der Forschung sind 10 Millionen Euro richtig, richtig viel. Aber wie können denn eigentlich so viel Geld? Gibt es vielleicht Tipps für Leute in der Recherche, für sich mit clever umzulehnen und für am Schluss auch können sehen, Dippe voller Geld zu holen? Ich hätte Jordi gefragt, ob er seinen kleinen Masterclass kann gehen.
To be honest, I would like to say that it's because I'm really good. But the answer is more the ecosystem. Because if you could look at or I could really cluster the money based on where I was at the time, the big money came in France, where I was the Côte de Mine, and I was part of leading an INRIA team, and in Luxembourg, were two places where the ecosystem, for different reasons, but the ecosystem was very rich and was, you say, very favorable to get grant money. When I was in Barcelona, I was less successful. I was the same person in the three places, right? And Barcelona was even after France, so it's not like I was a junior at the time. So it is, it's much more about how the ecosystem favors the interaction between companies and researchers and how they fit this, you know, this collaboration.
So every country has its own ecosystem. It's not like, let's say, universities where you know everyone has the same, like in the less academic part of the universities, with the bachelors, with the masters, where basically everything is the same. Mm-hmm. At one point, everything changes, or is it differently?
What do you mean about the ecosystem?
Yeah.
No, that's it's a government. Mm-hmm. It's the funding programs of the government. And what, for instance, what are the incentives they give to companies to collaborate with researchers? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of incentives to companies to collaborate with research because, you know, they get whatever 50% or whatever number it is of money from the government. If they do they go ahead with the collaboration, of course, they are much more inclined to collaborate with us, right? Mm-hmm. In France, but also there was a lot of money at the regional level. So maybe it was difficult to get national French projects, but it was easier to get regional French projects. So I think that my advice would be that you need to understand the ecosystem, and you need to understand that every ecosystem has grants that are easier to get than others, right? So you have to adapt your strategy to what you think is going to be more successful in that specific ecosystem. Again, in France was regional grants. Here, there's a lot of incentives to collaborate with industry, so there's a good opportunity if you really go to companies and try to present with them innovation projects. And at the European level, it's the same. There are calls that are less, populated. There are types of programs that are easier to get. So I think you need to be smart and really pick your battles.
If you pitch to a company, do they know what you're doing, or do you have to pitch it down and like we said at the beginning, explain it like you would explain it to a kid so that they get that they get it? Or how can I imagine this process?
You need to be aware of what type of, say, information they have been exposed to in the public media, right? And basically use that same terminology because that's what they understand. For instance, right now, everybody wants a chatbot. Every company wants a chatbot. And they have even heard a lot about this thing, which is called retrieval augmented generation, which means that the chatbot is able to answer based on a set of documents of the company that you provide. These things, they know. So you need to go to them and say, okay, we want to build with you a chatbot. And then there's going to be some part of the chatbot that is going to be innovative because that's what we want to research. But you need to approach them and make sure that you use their terminology and you present a solution to a problem that you know they have. That's the only way. Mm-hmm. You cannot just assume that they know what you do or that they are interested in what you do. They are not interested in what we do as a researcher, right? They're interested in a solution. They are not even interested in the technology that you're going to put in place to solve that problem. They just want the solution. So it's up to you to find a way to frame the solution they need in a way that it's a challenging problem and useful problem for you.
If I'm rightly informed, I'm looking for the quote, but I think you said that you want to have that every scientist is also an entrepreneur. So this is basically what you do. Isn't this...
What I have tried and failed, but anyway.
Okay, that's not what I wanted to ask, but we can go there soon. I wanted to, why should they be entrepreneurs?
Because when I tried and failed, at least I failed, but at least I understood and I learned a lot about what were the actual problems of the domain. And this is very difficult to learn by just publishing paper, right? Because when you publish a paper, even when you start a new research line, you start from a problem that you think it exists. But, I mean, yeah, you can look around, maybe you ask a couple of people, and you somehow get convinced that this is a real problem, and you develop a solution for that. But if you're not selling it, and people are not paying for that, you are not really sure. I mean, until you get people paying for your solution, you are not sure that, in fact, your solution is actually being useful to anybody. So to me, this sentence about scientists being entrepreneurs is a way is a way to somehow push researchers to make sure that they are targeting real problems instead of just writing papers by the for the sake of writing paper, which is one of the diseases in our community, right?
And why don't do researchers this way? So why do they choose to stay in academia, for example, and not to be an entrepreneur? Or is this only an European sort of thinking?
I think that it's really the ecosystem in this case is not really in favor of that, right? Because typically, if you want to have your own startup, there's no easy way to remain in academia and have the startup, or at least have an insurance that you will be able to go back to academia, right? So especially for young researchers, the only solution is to basically drop the academic career and jump into the startup world, which is something that not everybody wants to do. So there's really no sweet spot where you could somehow have part-time or, you know, half of, you know, 50% dedication to both sides, which makes it very risky.
KI aus Präsent, ich meine, das tun wir ganz klar und deutlich gemacht. Und immer mehr Leute profitieren davon. Betriebe, die Wissenschaft, Schulen, also gehen wir am Privaten. Und sich nutzt bald jeder mittlerweile KI. Und jeder kann es auch so ein bisschen. Und das ist am Anfang spannend, weil jeder befasst sich mit KI und sogar intergenerationell wird über dieses Sujet gespart. Das geschieht aber nicht mit einem physikalischen Gesetz oder der Plattentektonik. Mit KI, ja, du fühlst dich un, wie wenn der Sprung zwischen dem Jordi und mir noch nicht so groß ist. Obwohl das ja obviously der Fall ist. Aber ist das just eine Abbildung oder geht der Gap vielleicht vom Wissen von der KI zwischen dem normalen Mensch und dem Wissenschaftler immer mehr klein?
I would say that then it's getting closer if you look at new generations that have very really grown with this technology all around them, and they are the first ones that are always playing with all these tools. So my oldest daughter is 13, and last year already when she was 12, she came to me to show me the book cover. So they were writing the summary of a book they have read at the school, and she wanted to show me the book cover that she had created with one of these, not ChatGPT, but an alternative text-to-image generation, right? Mm-hmm. So she was not really aware of what was behind the tool, but in the WhatsApp, so it was not even the teacher, in the WhatsApp of the class, among themselves, somebody had posted a link, say, if you go there and you explain what you want, they will create an image for you. So they are already growing with all this technology awareness, and they will understand much easier, the challenge of building these tools.
You said your daughter is 12. How would you describe yourself when you were 12 years old, and what differs you from them to now?
There's nothing in common. There's nothing in common, to be honest. I mean, one thing that I hope they realize that they are very lucky about is how international is the environment where they are, right? And how accessible is everything in terms of information, in terms of culture, in terms of knowledge, compared to when I was 12 years old. There's a trade-off. I was more, probably more outdoors. There was other types of knowledge that they are going to miss. But to be honest, I'm sure that they are very happy with the times they are living in, and probably they would, maybe they will even choose to live, in the future. It's amazing the difference.
And where do you think have you? Or haven't you changed? Where do you say this was always Jordi from year one to now?
I think that you get. So I'm Catalan, and that's something. I mean, this kind of own personality, and the context of the place where you grow up when you're a teenager, I think that really has a strong impact on your personality. Mm-hmm. So Catalonia, Spain, and the type of family orientation we have there, the type of culture we have there, the type of relationship we have there. I think once you are, you know, 18 and you have grown in this place, even if you start moving around, you will never lose that specific traits, personality traits, right?
What is this personality trait?
So again, for instance, we are very close to family, where typically all the family lives very close. So even in my case, you know, the uncles were most of them were really in the same city. So you have a very close relationship with your grandparents, with your cousins. So it's not like in other cultures where basically, typically when you are 18, you go to study in a different place, different city, and maybe you are not coming back, right? In Spain, I would say even now, typically you go to the closest university to where you live, unless there's a very strong reason not to do so, which means that you stay living with your parents while you are still, while you are studying at university. So it's not like, again, it's not like at the 18 you go to a different part of the world. And this creates a stronger link, I would say, between the family members and even with a friend, right? It's more typical to have a close friends since you were 5 years old, maybe until now, no?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a different, very tight society. And this gives you some values about the value of friendship and about the value of family that you try to keep.
And how hard was it for you to leave?
Honestly, it was not hard. Again, we are in a time where communication is easy. Traveling is easy if you have the money. And even that is not so expensive anymore, I would say. So I think that I would say it was easy, but at the same time, I think that I realized how much you learn when you are with in a different context. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's even a little bit addictive. Right, I think that I enjoy being in a place where I cannot be fully comfortable because I don't master the language, I don't master the culture, and there are always new things that you don't know how to do, and you are constantly kind of pushing yourself. And that's something I like a lot.
If you close your eyes and imagine a typical smell that you have of your place where of the place where you lived, what would be that smell that brings you back immediately?
Yeah, the sea. The smell of the sea and the sound of the waves. That's really what I can picture when I close my eyes.
And did this place change since you left?
Not much, because the tourists have not discovered it yet. So you mentioned Lloret, you mentioned Barcelona, other people would mention Sitges or, you know, Salou, which is more in the south. But my city is kind of a average city. It's 100,000 people. Close to Barcelona, but it's not seen as a touristic destination.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that it has not changed a lot, which is somehow it's good.
Wieselo, kurz hier am Schluss von der Episode, aber eine Sache und schon Jordi noch ein bisschen freuen. Wenn ich Helo nicht für ein Interview getroffen hat, nee, so mal bei einer Party. Wollt ihr vielleicht so ein Party-Trick, den immer bei den Leuten gut könnt?
No. No, I think I'm just I'm good at being sarcastic, which sometimes is bad. We're in the context of a political scenario, but in a party, typically it's better. It's more appreciated, right? Because at least you can make some improvise some jokes in the moment.
Are you also the funny one of your friend group?
No, but again, I'm the serious one that then when nobody expects that has a sarcastic comment that gets you out of the blue, right? And question whether it was a serious comment or a sarcastic one, right? Because you know, as a scientist, you are supposed to be the serious guy, not the funny guy, right? Especially as I wouldn't say maybe as a scientist, but as a computer scientist. We have you're typically seen as the geeks of the team, right?
Are you a geek?
I don't consider myself one, no. I think I'm not the typical stereotype of a computer scientist.
Where do you differ? Expect on that you don't know how to code or not
yeah,
that
but,
good.
Do you want more than that? I'm not really, for instance, I'm not really aware of the latest releases of mobile phones or any other type of hardware or, you know, the gadgets, something like that. I'm not really following that.
One last question is, we are sitting in your office and it's really clean and it's very organized and let's say
there are no pictures.
No pictures, there are no colors also, besides on the whiteboard. Would you describe your brain the same, very functional, very logical, or would you say it's just the office at the moment now?
So when I was a kid, there was this psychological test that we were all forced to take at the school, mm-hmm. where you were classified according to several dimensions, right? And there was one that was about imagination from one to from 0 to 100, and I got a 100.
Okay.
So I'm supposed to be very imaginative. So I think I try to combine both things. So I have I like a lot to think about ideas and solutions, but then I also like to execute on some of those. I think that it's a risk to only execute and then just have short-term goals with no ambition. But at the same time, it's a risk to just spend your life thinking about long-term goals that you will never do, right? So again, I think we need to find the balance. And to be honest, I think that AI will help me even more in this balance, right? Because I can have the ideas, but I don't have much time for the execution. So I use my team for some of those executions. But if AI can also help me to kind of execute some of these ideas, that's even better. Mm-hmm. And just a small example, but there was a small application that I wanted to build. I had this idea in my Trello, which is the tool I use to kind of keep track of my ideas for more than 1 year. I never had the time to do it because it was a small thing, but it would still take me 3-4 days of time to code because I'm not a good coder. Until very recently, I took one of these AI assistants. I did it in 2 hours. So AI allowed me to execute this idea very fast. So mm-hmm. it's kind of an enabler for me.
Das war es von Mein Element. Ich hoffe, ihr habt genauso viel gefallen wie mir. Merci auch dem Jordi. Aber wenn ihr das Thema KI interessiert, dann gebe ich so einen Nutz den Algorithmus von Spotify einkehr an sich die Alfolgen von Mein Element. Es sind noch ganz viele spannende Themen dabei. In anderem auch um KI geht es da. Dafür klickt euch durch, lauscht alles durch, weist es Freunde und Familie an mich herinnen. Die nächste Kehrung. Bis dann. Ciao.